Radio 4. Now the time is 8:15. Saturday Night Theatre.
Peter Barkworth as Sir Anthony Eden in Suez by Royce Wrighton.
I have to tell the house!
With Sarah Bedell as Lady Eden, David Buck as Colonel Nasser, Gwen Watford as the Israeli ambassador, and Peter Marinka as John Foster Dulles. Suez.
It's very good of you to see me, sir.
Not at all.
You must be tired of these interviews.
Far from it. They fascinate me.
I read somewhere you didn't like them.
You mustn't believe all you read in the papers. Being interviewed has become one of my hobbies, and who can ever resist indulging in a favourite hobby?
I have heard it said you can't believe all the politicians say either.
True, but they have the fate of the country and sometimes the world in their hands. A premature announcement can be disastrous. Journalists are only worrying about their circulation. See, there is a difference. Shall we sit?
Thank you.
Well, go on.
If I could ask one or two personal questions.
Oh, I don't think so.
As background?
There's no need. Your readers know who I am by now. Besides, my entry in Who's Who is quite accurate. Eton and Oxford, that's all you need mention. Oh, and perhaps my service in the First World War. Yes, my resignation from the Chamberlain government. But your newspaper files will tell you all that. So let's get down to what I believe is called the nitty-gritty. Is that right?
Yes.
I'm becoming quite modern. Yes, we can get down to Suez. That's what you came to see me about.
Yes, sir.
Yes, it always is.
This new Suez War...
No, it's not a new war at all. It's the fifth edition of the first one. There'll be more editions, too. You see, young man, I'm totally unrepentant.
Why?
Because I was right.
You've no doubts?
None.
You'd do it again?
Of course.
Almost everyone criticises you.
Oh, yes.
Doesn't shake your confidence?
No.
Why not?
I knew my job.
You were a professional?
That's it.
But there are other professional politicians.
Well, they're very good at economics and home affairs, perhaps. But I'd spent a lifetime in foreign affairs. They hadn't. And they don't still.
You were considered weak on the home front?
Indeed.
Were you?
No.
Well, even the Daily Telegraph said you were.
Yes, I remember.
I'm told you were much upset by that article at the time.
Not upset, furious.
What's the difference?
Well, I didn't think their criticism accurate for a moment. I was furious at their folly.
And they said you were not giving the smack of firm government.
Yes, I recall that idiotic comment. Well, smack of firm government. It sounds good, doesn't it? What does it mean?
That you should govern.
How? By smacking the voters, punishing them when they're naughty and don't do as they're told. This is a lovely thought, I confess. The leaders of the TUC, for example, I should have sent for them, lined them up, and called them into my study one by one and given them six of the best. Well, yes, I know, but that's what that phrase means, force. Do you know what my critics on the home front were all creating about? Rising prices and strikes.
Really?
Oh, yes. I should be very glad to know the name of the Prime Minister, Tory or Socialist, who has dealt successfully with either.
I see what you mean about being unrepentant. Your critics also say you were too ill to be Prime Minister.
Was Dulles too ill to be American Secretary of State? He had cancer, which 2 years later killed him. Was Nasser too ill to be President of Egypt? He had diabetes and since died of a heart attack. Eisenhower was President of the USA. He was extremely ill with a succession of heart attacks, one of which eventually killed him. Gaitskell has since died, so has Morrison. You'll observe, young man, that I'm still alive.
Nevertheless, you had three major operations.
I had one operation done three times.
Wasn't that the same thing?
Not really. No, it was a complicated operation, not a serious one. The mechanics were difficult. So they had to make three attempts. Had they succeeded the first time, no one would ever have mentioned it.
Many people say it affected you.
My temper, yes, not my judgment.
You shouted and raved.
It's quite true.
It had been described as the most courteous of men.
What a charming description.
Is it true?
Well, that's for others to say.
You were determined to use force against Egypt.
Yes.
I'm sure you like your shouting. That was uncharacteristic.
Not a bit of it.
Well, your whole career was spent as a peacemaker. You were famous for your negotiating skill.
But, young man, you can only negotiate successfully from strength, and you have to use that strength. That's what it's for. So I was always quite prepared to go to war. No, my desire to use force against Nasser was not at all uncharacteristic. You must look at my career. Before 1939, I wanted to use force against Mussolini and Hitler. My whole life has been spent striving to get the voter to understand the extreme importance of strength wisely used. If we do not uphold at all times the absolute sanctity of international agreements, then the world will decline into anarchy, which is what it's doing. To prevent anarchy, you have to enforce law and order. The real reason for my behavior at the time was that I could not believe the stupidity of the rest of the world. I felt like a man in a boat at sea, watching a large liner sail into an iceberg. Naturally, I strove to prevent it. I sent up warning signals. But despite all my efforts, the passengers and crew only saw the tip of the iceberg. Not one of them remembered the Titanic.
Munich.
Yes, Abyssinia too, and 1914. So I did the only thing I could. I sailed into the iceberg myself.
In 1954, Sir Anthony Eden was Foreign Secretary on a visit to the United Nations in New York.
Oh, good morning, Your Excellency.
Good morning, Mr. Ellsworthy.
I should have been at the door to meet you. Do forgive me. Sir Anthony is expecting you. I shall announce you without further ado.
Excuse me, sir. His Excellency, the Egyptian ambassador.
That is not correct.
Hmm? Not correct? Have I made an error? Good gracious me, now where's my list of appointments? Have I ruined my career? Where's my calendar? This is absurd. You are the Egyptian ambassador. I've met you. You look as you always do.
Semitic?
That is to say, Egyptian.
I am not the Egyptian ambassador any longer.
You've resigned?
Nor have I resigned.
I'm getting confused. Dear, if only I'd gone to a state school instead of Eton, it makes all the difference, I believe.
I am the ambassador of all the Arabs.
Oh, I see.
I will not see Sir Anthony unless I am announced correctly.
Oh, yes, of course. Whereas I am sure Egypt agrees to your appointment, what other Arab country does? What about Jordan, Iraq, Saudi Arabia? You see, they will send us their own personal ambassadors.
They are all ruled by fascist monarchies who do not in any way represent the people. Our government does.
But their governments are in power.
They should not be.
But they are. That is the point. They are there. They exist. We have to recognize what exists.
I don't see why.
We recognize you.
You only recognize part of me.
We're going to get into a terrible muddle in a minute. America says Red China isn't there at all, but she is. And you say Israel isn't there either, but she is too. And now you say you are someone you aren't, and that we only recognize part of you when that part of you is all you are.
I am not just the part of a whole. I am the whole.
With or without the W.
What's that?
Never mind. Look, shall we start again? Perhaps if I were to announce you by your name.
I have no name. I am every Arab.
That will do splendidly. His Excellency Mr. Every Arab to see you, sir.
What on earth?
I'll explain later. Come in, Your Excellency.
Sir Anthony.
My dear fellow.
Your secretary wished to announce me as the Egyptian ambassador, whereas, of course, I am the ambassador of all the Arabs.
I understand exactly how you feel.
You do?
Well, I have the same difficulty.
Really?
Oh, constantly. They will announce me as the English Foreign Secretary, whereas, of course, I'm the British one.
Are indeed the same?
Oh, good Lord, no. No, the Scots and the Welsh get very angry. Our little island has its nationalistic problems, too. I found a way of dealing with
and
it.
And what is that?
I ignore it. It seems to me simplest. We know what the truth really is, don't we? And as long as we're listened to, that's what matters.
The British are listened to.
I wish we were.
No one ever listens to us. How can they? They're deafened by Jewish propaganda.
Well, your own is quite loud in the Middle East. I've heard it.
That is the only place you can hear it. You should ask yourself one question, Sir Anthony. Who controls an enormous percentage of the world's wealth? The Jews.
Well, you have oil. Do sit down.
That, again, is in the Middle East. We do not make films in Hollywood. We do not own newspapers in New York. We do not have chain stores throughout the Western world. We do not have our co-religionists in every city in Europe and America. We do not own television companies. We do not have MPs in Westminster, and neither have we senators in Washington. The Jews have all that and more.
We will make a bargain. I will listen to you, and then you will listen to me.
We have two problems. First, Israel, which is an aggressive fascist state who refuses to define her borders, who wants more and more land.
Before we go any further, we really must make a second bargain. You must not make a propaganda speech at me, and I will not make one at you.
Zionism has a policy of unlimited immigration, which is fully supported by the Israeli government. Consequently, we have to face the fact that every foreign Jew is a potential Israeli citizen with the right, which is in every way encouraged, to settle in Israel.
But not necessarily exercised.
It could be, though. And past history is not encouraging. The numbers are terrifying. The Jewish population in New York alone could double the Israeli one. And what about London, Manchester, Johannesburg? What about the rest of America, the rest of the world? Where are they all going to go? Israel will have to have and wants more land.
But it's ridiculous to suppose every Jew will settle in Israel.
Oh, we don't think so. In 1929, it was ridiculous to suppose Hitler would come to power. It was ridiculous to suppose he would carry out his intention toward the Jews. He did both within 4 years. As a result, a tiny trickle of immigrants in the 20s became a flood by the 50s, and more are coming. That is why Ben-Gurion refused to define his borders. Israel was created by a ruthless policy of coercion, aggression, and distortion. Take the infamous Balfour Declaration, for example. I spit on it.
Oh, dear, he's awful.
It expresses a hope. This has been turned by lying Jewish propaganda into a promise. It wasn't at all, not at all.
Are you getting this down?
Just about.
Even this hope specifically stated that the non-Jewish population had to have their rights fully protected. But this is completely ignored. What tactics did the Jew employ before 1948? Murder. It was the Jews who murdered Lord Moyne, Count Bernadotte.
Lord Moyne, he was a Guinness, you know.
Countless Arabs and many, many British soldiers, too. And what have their tactics been since 1948? Terrorism. And why? I will tell you. They want to drive the Arab out of the Middle East altogether. But they will not succeed. No, no, never. Because we will drive them into the sea first.
Yes, that was a most impressive performance, Ambassador. However, it's very difficult to define your border when you don't exist.
It's not a question of whether Israel is recognized or not. It was Ben-Gurion's policy when he proclaimed Israel an independent state. He very carefully declined to limit its size. He gave America as an example, and well he might. When American independence was declared, it did not define its borders either. Since which time America has driven out the French and the Spanish and murdered all the Indians. It pushed west and south, swallowing up Texas and California. The Arab people are anxious to live in peace with the rest of the world, but we do not intend to be either driven out or murdered.
Mm-hmm. And your second problem?
We are poor and starving because of the evils of Western, that is to say, British, colonialism.
Well, I agree that the Middle East has been the victim of colonialism.
You agree, Sir Anthony?
Oh, absolutely. But it must not happen again.
No, indeed.
We must do all in our power to prevent it.
Quite.
But Western, that is to say, British colonialism, has not been your trouble.
Sir Anthony, that is really...
It's my turn. Nor will British colonialism worry you in the future. Eastern colonialism is your problem. It was Turkey, an Eastern Islamic power, who ruled the Middle East until 1918.
My country.
Well, you're speaking for all the Arabs, remember. Now, we've only been in the Middle East since 1918, barely 35 years, and now we're leaving. And as we leave country after country, Russia infiltrates into country after country.
Russia doesn't worry us at all.
Well, then it should.
We are not anti-Western, but then neither are we anti-Soviet. The threat to us does not come from Russian, but from Israel and her Western allies.
Well, that is the orthodox Arab view, I agree. And by the time you realize your mistake, I hope it won't be too late. There is one way for the Arabs to force the Israelis to define their borders.
How?
By recognition.
Never. No, never.
Wait a moment.
Never. All Arabs would rather die. Israel is a fascist state. It exists, if it exists at all, which it doesn't, through lies and deceit. They intend to drive us out of the Middle East.
Well, we've had that speech already. Now, I believe that recognition...
Never.
I believe that recognition...
Never.
Now, listen to me. Would force the Israelis to define their borders. There would have to be a neutral border commission, a UNO commission.
No.
Now, do calm down. Furthermore, by recognizing Israel, you remove one of her most powerful propaganda weapons against you. And recognition may mean defeat for the Palestinian Arabs.
Defeat? We die first. We kill ourselves first. We're never defeated. We drive the Jews into the sea and trample on them.
It will also mean defeat for the Israelis.
What's that?
It will also mean defeat for the Israelis. Israel cannot spread her borders if they are defined. Surely that is in your interest.
We can never recognize Israel. It is impossible. Any Arab leader who suggested it would be assassinated.
Then you will never be able to control her, and you must. It's a very dangerous situation for the world and for you. America spread to twice her size. You don't want Israel to do that, do you? And think of the temptation put before the Israelis. They see a desert surrounding them, and they know they could transform it into a garden of... forgive the pun. Into a Garden of Eden.
We can make our own Garden of Eden.
Well, of course you will in time.
No, now. We could now.
If you had the money, the Israelis have it already.
Yes, from you.
Well, many Jews give their own private wealth.
Your governments give them money as well.
Israel has powerful connections with many Western governments.
And, of course, you all have your Jewish vote to think of.
You want money for the Aswan Dam, and both America and the British government want to give it to you. But we have to go to Parliament. We have to persuade them that the money will only be used for peaceful purposes.
We are not aggressors.
Well, then why sound aggressive? Your radio stations pour out threats, not only against Israel, but against us too. It's really not at all the way to win friends and influence people. And then you show no respect for treaties. Nasser has denounced the Anglo-Egyptian treaty. Why?
It was signed by the corrupt royalist government.
It was Egypt's legal government at the time. All political parties signed it. We've renegotiated many clauses with Nasser himself, and he has signed it. The Anglo-Egyptian treaty contains no provision for unilateral denunciation at any time.
Our people demand...
They demand what Nasser tells them to demand.
He is not a dictator.
Is there an opposition party?
We have no need for one. No one opposes him. They love him too much.
If the principle were accepted that one party to such a treaty could denounce it unilaterally, no reliance could be placed on any international agreement, and the whole basis and structure of international relations would cease to exist.
I understand perfectly. We won't get the money.
Cease denouncing treaties. Cease your hostile broadcasts. Recognize Israel.
We can go to Russia.
Do you seriously imagine Russia won't impose her own conditions?
The Palestinian is homeless. The Jew has taken his home. That is the condition, I understand. To recognize Israel is to recognize theft. It is to legalize robbery. And that we will never do. If that is the condition for helping us, Sir Anthony, then I do not want your help. The Jew may once have owned Israel, but that was thousands of years ago. He went away and has become English, American, German, South African. He's become Western. He's no longer Middle Eastern. He's an alien. He must return from whence he came, that is to say, to the West. The city of New York is his capital, not Jerusalem. He owns all this. Must he have our Palestine, too? He must return to America. If he won't, then he has a war on his hands which will last forever. We will suffer defeats. We will lose battles, yes, but we will never surrender. Each defeat will be but a spur to our revenge. We will lie in wait. We will rise up. We will never let him rest. We will kill him.
Are you getting this down?
Yes, sir.
We will fight war after war. We will unite all Arabs. We can find allies. The Jew is an imperialist lackey. He's an evil capitalist. And in the end, we will triumph because our cause is a just cause. We will overcome. God is on our side.
You poor dears. How long did he talk for?
An hour at least. He didn't talk at all. He ranted at us. When he finished, he was so exhausted, he was practically a stretcher case.
I believe NASA's speeches are never less than 3 hours.
Yes, they're crazy. They hurl abuse at us and then with the next breath demand money. They threaten Israel and then wonder why America isn't eager to help them. They complain about the Jewish vote and then say they'll drive all Jews into the sea. And I said to him, it's not the way to win friends.
Did he make any reply?
Not really. Just another speech, that's all.
So there's no solution?
None either side will accept.
Are the Israelis as bad?
Well, they're cleverer about it. Just as intractable. Really, what else can they be? They're there and they intend to stay there. One comes up with common sense solutions and it's like stepping on landmines. There can be no two opinions about it. Being in the Foreign Office is an extremely dangerous pastime.
Do you remember the 30s?
Not really.
I do.
Winston came back from a private visit to Germany distraught. He saw perfectly what was happening. He also saw how to stop it. No one listened to him.
You think it's as serious as that?
Just as serious. NASA is even now approaching Russia. The Middle East is about the one place so far where the Russians have made no headway, but it's idiotic to suppose they won't go on trying. As for the oil sheikhs, all they want is money, and they don't care where they get it from. If Russia can persuade them she won't topple them from power, they'll sell oil to her as soon as look at her.
Yes, I see.
And they'll get arms from Russia.
Of course.
And America will arm Israel.
But neither side will send men.
Not at first.
Russia will smuggle men in as technicians. Israel will discover it. And then we'll have a confrontation between the two major powers. Both our oil and the canal will be endangered.
We must warn America.
See, Israel must not provoke the Arabs. And she must not block the loan through the Jewish lobby. But I can tell you now, she'll do both those things. You see, I don't just want to stop NASA and the Russians. I want to stop Israel. And the Americans, too. And they won't like that. So I'll have to do it without telling them.
How?
I've no idea. But I shall take the next opportunity, whatever that may be.
But my dear Sir Anthony, I should have thought the Israeli position perfectly clear. We wish above all things to live in peace with our neighbors. Our people have suffered a great deal from wars. However, when we are threatened, we naturally have to defend ourselves. The 1917 Balfour Declaration...
A promise to a home, not a country.
A national home. That is a country.
And the home was to be set up without upsetting the existing non-Jewish population. By no stretch of the imagination can you claim to have done that.
That is exactly what we claim. The Arabs who stayed are perfectly happy. Is it our fault if other Palestinians listen to their own foolish and lying propaganda?
Well, those who stayed are a tiny minority, easily controlled and tolerated. Those who fled declare that they were driven away.
But that is not true.
Not many people voluntarily leave their homes. The Jews fled from Russia and Germany because of persecution, not for a change of scene.
We fled from necessity. The pogroms are a historical fact. The Arab fled because he was a fool.
But a strange people had come to rule their land.
It was never theirs. It was always ours. The Bible is our mandate.
Well, I know Ben-Gurion always says that. But the Bible has no legal standing. And even if it had, it's extremely inaccurate and unreliable.
The legal authority we have is that we have never willingly given up our country.
Well, that is what the Arab says.
We were driven from our native land.
The Arab says that too.
Always we have returned.
And that is what the Arab wants to do.
We have returned many times from Egypt, from Persia. And now we return from Europe and America.
And that is what the Arab is frightened of, your returning from America.
The Egyptian is obviously very persuasive, Sir Anthony.
Not persuasive. Illuminating.
And how did he light the way for you?
Not by his arguments. Nor by his methods.
Then how?
By his fears. It's unwise to frighten your enemy too much.
Shall I tell you something, Sir Anthony? We have done more for the Arab than anyone else in the world.
And what's that?
We have given him a nationality. Before 1948, he was a vague nomad. Now he is an Arab. Unfortunately, he has acquired this national identity too late. But that's not our fault. It's an accident of history.
Oh, I agree with you. But people with a new national identity want somewhere to live.
He has the rest of the Middle East. He has Jordan, Saudi Arabia, Egypt.
The Palestinian Arab wants Israel.
We have bought him out. We bought his derelict farms at fair prices.
He says he was cheated.
He only said that when he saw them transformed into a paradise. And that is what gave him his national identity. But there are other deserts where Arabs not only live, they rule as well. Palestine was not an Arab country, and Israel never will be.
To fertilize a desert requires money.
It's quite simple. We got money from abroad. Many millionaire Jews helped us. There are, you know, millionaire Arabs, too. There are Arab sheikhs whose oil brings in $1,000 million a day instead of financing armies.
Well, Nasser can't go to them.
Nasser should cease to undermine their regimes. It's not our fault if...
He has come to us, to America.
We do not believe he should have the loan. It will enable him to use his own money for buying arms. If he goes to the oil millionaires...
But he won't do that. He'll go to Russia. And you must see the outcome of your policy. If through the Jewish lobby you stop the loan, then Nasser will go to Russia. And then the communists won't just be on the Danube as they are now. They'll be on the Nile. Your government's policy is equally dangerous elsewhere. You're frightening the Arabs. And that's why they've acquired a national identity. Not through greed, through fear.
What have they to be frightened of? We are a small, peace-loving nation.
You have never renounced Zionist policy of unlimited immigration.
And we never will. How could we? A Jew has been persecuted throughout the centuries. Civilized nations deplored the pogroms, but have they ever protected the victims of them? But now, Israel will protect them. We will open our doors to them.
No matter how many?
No matter how many.
6 million Jews fled or were killed in Germany. You'd have taken them all?
All.
And where will you put them? I ask merely for information, as does the Arab. You even say you will take back the Palestinians who fled, provided they acknowledge your rule. So that's another million or so. Where are they going?
We can accommodate them.
Where? Not in Israel, madam. That's too small. So where? I'll tell you something. Israel worries me. You're playing with fire. Your army is a political force.
Ben-Gurion can control it.
Well, I'm not sure he either can or wants to. You haven't had an army for thousands of years. It's a new toy. And why did Ben-Gurion refuse to define your borders?
Without Arab cooperation, how could he?
No, there's more to it than that. I know quite well that there's a fierce argument going on in your cabinet. Now, one party, Ben-Gurion and the military, want to be as aggressive as possible. The other party urges caution and peaceful tactics. Your military leaders have made a very dangerous statement. What we have, we hold. Now, what does that mean?
I don't recall it.
Well, I do. And Ben-Gurion didn't deny it. Bismarck's one major mistake to annex Alsace-Lorraine was made at the insistence of the military, and Germany never knew a moment's tranquility after it. Be very careful. You do not push the Arabs too far.
It is they who threaten us.
Well, you must understand why they threaten you. My dear Ambassador, you have everything on your side. You have America, you have the emotional guilt of the world on your side. You have Western know-how, you have history, and, if you insist, legality on your side. Shall I tell you what the Arab has? A burning desire for revenge. A potential force from the Atlantic to the Indian Ocean, oil, and Russia. You should make sure your military do not overreach themselves.
In 1955, Sir Anthony, as Prime Minister, paid a visit to Colonel Nasser in Cairo.
Ah, Your Excellency. It's a great privilege to be able to entertain you at the embassy.
It's a great honor for me to be here.
The Prime Minister will be down shortly. I'm afraid Lady Eden asks you to excuse her. She's exhausted by the flight.
Oh, I am so sorry. They have been making a grand tour?
India mostly and the Far East.
Also Baghdad and Tehran.
I believe so. Would you like some refreshments? Soft drinks are over here.
Thank you.
The Prime Minister was thrilled with India.
It must be a wonderful country now she is independent.
I should imagine it was a wonderful country at any time. No, I've never been there, of course. Mr. Ambassador.
Thank you.
You read the Field Marshal's exposition on the strategic plan behind the proposed Baghdad Pact.
Oh, yes. I found it admirable. The purpose behind it all was very clear to me.
Oh, it was very good of you to meet us at the airport.
It was a pleasure, Sir Anthony. I am sorry Lady Eden is indisposed.
There's nothing serious.
Whiskey, Sir Anthony?
Please. So I have a great affection for Egypt.
How delightful for us.
Yes, it's the only time my head has been on a stamp. The special stamps were printed when I signed the Anglo-Egyptian Treaty in 1936. Oh, thank you very much. So I have, as you know, to fly back to England tomorrow. Perhaps we should get down to business at once.
I would like that, but may I first of all say, Sir Anthony, how pleased we are that you have found time to visit us, and how delighted we are at the improvement of Anglo-Egyptian relations.
I share your joy.
Together, we will go forward.
Oh, I'm sure.
As friends.
Quite so.
And equals.
Of course.
Then all Englishmen will be loved, but especially you, Sir Anthony.
Thank you. You read the Field Marshal's report?
Yes.
You agree with him?
Of course.
And you understand what we're trying to do?
Perfectly.
If Sir Raif would explain the political position...
No, that too is clear.
Ah.
Russia, you say, has conducted a policy of belligerence.
I should have thought that undeniable, Your Excellency. She spies on us, she threatens us. She's penetrated deep into Europe, hence NATO.
I understand why you have a defensive alliance in Europe. Why do you want one in the Middle East?
We believe her next serious move will be to this area.
Why? We have two vital interests in this part of the world, the Suez Canal and oil. We will go to extreme lengths to protect both. And now that we have removed all our troops...
That was a move of great friendship. That is why England is so much loved.
We shall have to protect those interests.
Our friendship is your protection.
We value it, Colonel Nasser. And your friendship is demonstrated clearly by the treaty you've signed with us, in which you will recall we can return our troops to the canal zone if necessary.
It will never be necessary.
A war in the canal zone would endanger our oil supply, in which case it would, in our view, be necessary. You agree?
That is what the treaty states.
America has put forward the idea of a pact between the Arab states and ourselves. This pact would include America. Thus, there would be a defensive alliance embracing the entire free world.
Defense against whom?
Russia.
I understand the necessity of it in Europe, but for why here? The oil sheikhs could not possibly be friendly with Russia, nor could any Mohammedan power. We all reject so material a policy as communism.
It's not enough to reject communism. One has to be on one's guard against it.
You will forgive me, of course, but I think the timing behind the Baghdad Pact is unfortunate.
I don't think so.
We have just ceased being what was to all intents and purposes a British colony. Oh, I know we were allegedly independent, but we were occupied by a British army, and the British dominated our trade. Now, you have left, and you say to us, join a pact. The Western-dominated pact will be nothing but a return to colonialism.
Turkey and Iraq have signed it, and they're independent countries.
Turkey is.
Well, so is Iraq.
Not in my view.
Well, why not?
A reactionary royalist regime is backed by Western finance.
No, it's not reactionary. It's very progressive, and it's achieved amazing results. And what if we do give Iraq money? You want money from the West. Will you lose your independence when you get it?
Of course not. But I must not only not lose my independence, I must not seem to lose it either. Therein lies my predicament, Sir Anthony. I have to be very careful. I want money for the high dam, which I believe will transform life for the ordinary Egyptian. You want me to borrow this money from the West, but it will only be lent on specific conditions, which I will have to explain to my people. They are concerned that the terms do not mean economic colonialism. On top of all this, I am to join a pact which will inevitably be dominated by the strongest powers, in this case, America and you. This will seem to them like a return to indirect colonialism. One I can do, both are impossible. That is why the timing is wrong.
It's never the right time for some people.
To leave and then to return at once can never be good timing.
We are not returning.
It will look as if you are. The Egyptian will say, we are poor, they are rich, they lend us money, why? He will say, we have no army and we sign a pact with them and they have enormous armies. Who controls the pact? Not us, them.
For us to wait is to allow events to take control. Russia won't wait, nor can your dam.
No, certainly not the dam. It is essential.
Well, to get money for it, you have to convince the Americans that you can repay it and that you will not use it against Israel. Now, the best way to do this is to join the pact. She will see that you're friendly with the West. She will see that you reject communism. She will not only lend money, she will use her influence on Israel.
What influence? She has none. It's the other way round. Israel, through the Jews in America, wields enormous influence. And by the Jewish vote, forces America into many foolish attitudes. But Israel has not done one thing she has not wished to do.
Israel attacks us. We are a peaceful people. She has stolen our land. Have we stolen her?
I'm familiar with your arguments.
We have never attacked Israel, but they attack us.
Well, that is what the Israelis say.
We were driven from our land.
Yes, so was the Jew.
But not by us. We will return.
The Jew has returned.
One thing is certain. I can control my army, but can Ben-Gurion? And does he want to? Your ambassador here will agree. For the past 6 months, all has been quiet.
That's quite right, Your Excellency.
Suddenly, for no reason at all, we have a Gaza raid. Of course, there is a reason. They talk of retaliation, but that is a lie. It's a retaliation for nothing. So, why do they attack us? I tell you, the Israeli cabinet did not authorize the raid. The military, probably with Ben-Gurion's secret support, took matters into their own hands.
What for?
To provoke us, to keep up the heat.
The Israelis want more land, of course, but also they want us to become violent.
Whatever for?
To blacken our reputation, to make my own military aggressive, to make us want arms. Then they can say, don't give him money. Then the dam won't be built and we will remain poor and backward.
Then outwit the Israelis.
How?
Don't retaliate.
Impossible.
Why?
My people will demand retaliation. Their restraint is not superhuman.
For 30 years, the British tried to get the Arab population in Palestine to agree to some sort of representation.
Some sort.
Now, had they accepted it, they would have had an organization existing to protect them. They had none, nor had they now. The Arabs are not united.
Not yet.
Like you, the Israeli fled.
Thousands of years.
Like you, he did not give up.
Nor will we.
But unlike you, he negotiated for his return. He even tried to negotiate with the Palestinians, who refused to do so. He's prepared to negotiate with you now. But you say Israel doesn't exist, so how can he?
I know you want us to recognize Israel, but we never will.
We fight them forever. We fight them till they are destroyed. We fight them till we die. We fight them till they are in the sea. We fight.
Yes, yes, I've got the message. Don't worry, so is Israel. How can her cabinet control her army leaders when they know you're out to destroy her?
Tell your American friends they must stop the Israelis.
I have already done so, but they listen to your propaganda. They hear your attacks on the Baghdad Pact. I will have to tell them you won't join it. You can hardly blame them if they're cautious about the loan.
We can go elsewhere.
Oh, be very careful. The bear will hug you warmly, first of all, and then strangle you. You don't want an Israeli victory, nor our influence in the Middle East. I accept that. Just make sure the price you pay to get rid of us is not too high.
Is that a threat?
No warning. Neither of us wants the Middle East to be another Korea.
Egypt is neutral and independent. Never again will it be dominated by another power.
I hope time will prove you right.
Prime Minister really thought Nasser wouldn't last.
Well, he was wrong.
He's on the telephone to Washington.
Well, let's hope they can talk some sense into him.
Nutty, you really mustn't say things like that here.
Well, doesn't it worry you? He's carrying on as if war was imminent, as if Nasser was a reincarnation of Hitler. I mean, he's completely lost his touch. I think he's a very sick man.
He's been a superb foreign secretary.
He's less than superb as a prime minister, Selwyn. And not just the socialists say so, the Tories do. Price rises every day, strikes are endless. But they must be dealt with. He dismisses those problems and rages about Nasser. Nasser must be stopped. Nasser must go.
Nasser was behind General Glubb's dismissal, of that I've no doubt.
I have.
Oh, I was in Cairo at the time. When I heard the news, it was at dinner with Nasser. Nasser smirked with delight and had the impertinence to congratulate me on a coup.
Well, perhaps he was sincere.
The King of Jordan would never have dismissed Glubb without Nasser's urging.
I don't agree.
Glubb and the King were great friends.
It seems quite natural to me. Hussein was to be master in his own house, and Glubb is British, so however loyal he is to the King, it looked as if Glubb was in control. And then again, Hussein is young, Glubb is old. It was the natural order of things that Glubb should go. I don't see it as at all sinister.
Then why did he do it so brutally? One day's notice. Pack up and go. Bag and baggage. The man lived there. Spent his life there.
Tactlessness of youth, perhaps. The King's 20. Or perhaps, very sensibly, he didn't want time for a demonstration in Glubb's favour. I mean, he had to do it quickly.
Then why was Nasser so pleased?
He wants us out of the whole Middle East.
But we have vital interests there.
We must secure these by treaties.
That's what the Prime Minister wishes to do. But what do we do if they aren't kept?
Go to Yuno.
And if Yuno does nothing?
Well, if we don't support it, show faith in it, no one else will.
Thank you. In other words, scuttle every time.
I can't get any sense out of Washington. Dulles is abroad and Eisenhower in hospital, and all their aides can talk about is the next election. Is the American ambassador here yet?
No, sir.
We'll bring him in the moment he is.
Gaitskill wants to see you.
Whatever for?
It's not about the Middle East.
I'm sure it isn't. He probably doesn't know it's there.
It's about the industrial situation.
Right. Those poor, sweet, bewildered socialists don't know the world round yet.
The strike situation is very serious.
There are two ways, and two ways only, of dealing with strikes. One is for the strikers to exercise self-control. The government can only ask for this in a democracy, and I've done exactly that.
And the second way?
To do what Russia does, and that is to shoot them. I've not done that, nor, despite considerable provocation, have I any plans to do so.
I'm relieved to hear it.
There is a third method. To give them what they want.
Well, as a recipe for inflation and bankruptcy, that method is unbeatable. In any case, even if I did, it wouldn't satisfy them. The TUC is packed with communists, all secret, whose job is never to be satisfied. And even when they aren't secret communists, they're socialists who, like the rest of their breed, can't see further than the ends of their political noses. No, I won't see Gaitskill. Tell him that the Second World War did not break out because of strikes in Manchester, but because the socialists were mad, placed faith in a powerless league, wouldn't vote for arms even in 1939, and didn't know a power-mad dictator when they saw one.
I'll tell him you'll be at meetings all day.
Yes, that'll do. Anything else?
Nasser's made a speech.
What about?
Peace.
Oh, of course. I wonder if he gets Hitler's speeches and just translates them into Arabic. It would certainly save him a lot of trouble if he did.
You don't think Nasser's genuine?
Of course he is.
About peace, I mean.
And so do I.
Well,
Hitler was genuine too. The only trouble is their price is too high. Hitler wanted Europe and Nasser wants the Arab world. Ring up the embassy again, Lance.
Yes, sir.
Nasser is only leader of a backward African country.
Nasser wants an Arab empire, he says so.
His propagandists say so, and not him.
Well, of course, that was Hitler's technique, to threaten over the radio and on the press, and to make comparatively reasonable speeches himself. Whilst I'm Prime Minister, I do not intend to let any dictator get away with anything. Whatever the Americans say, their threats must be stood up to.
If only Dulles would make up his mind.
Well, he can't, he's a lawyer. He also thinks he's clever, so he won't listen to anyone. And by refusing Nasser this loan, he's throwing him straight into Russia's arms. I should have thought any fool could work that one out, but Dulles evidently can't.
But Russia's condition...
will be non-existent. The Soviet has no parliament, no public opinion, no bankers, and no Jewish vote. She will give Egypt everything Nasser wants. Blank checks will flutter from the bear's bloody paws like confetti. And this money will be her entrance fee into the Middle East. Both sides will arm, both major powers will be involved, and the balloon will go up.
They're both involved in Europe.
In Europe, there are clearly defined areas of influence. In the Middle East, there aren't. In Europe, there's an iron curtain keeping them apart. In the Middle East, there isn't. In Europe, there's no emotional problem. In the Middle East, there is. It's impossible to explain this to America. I've tried. It's impossible to explain this to Israel and Egypt. I've tried. I shall have to try in Parliament, but it will be very difficult, as I can't say to them, our main ally is raving mad. And quite apart from anything else, the socialists are demented on the subject of both Russia and Israel, and the Tories equally so about America. So we won't get any sense out of the House of Commons. Now, what I want is reason. Any reason at all. To move troops back into the canal zone.
Whatever for?
To stop the war.
But there isn't one.
There wasn't one in 1938 either.
It was a pity we ever moved.
Oh, it was essential. I couldn't get our troops out fast enough. The treaty stated we had to leave in another few years. I left earlier on purpose.
Why?
Because I wish to establish our right to return at the earliest possible moment. Now, once that right is established, not only in a treaty, but in fact and by example, then whenever there is trouble in that area, we can always return. One day, this year, 10 years' time, America and Russia will confront each other.
We have no such right.
Oh, it's in the treaty.
If there's trouble, Nutting, we can return.
But there's no trouble. Not yet.
There's bound to be sooner or later. And I want it now.
But why?
Well, I won't be Prime Minister forever. And I cannot be sure a socialist would see the danger. Gateskill certainly wouldn't. So it must happen during my term of office. And the sooner the better.
The ambassador's here, sir.
Bring him in.
Shall we both stay?
Yes, of course.
His Excellency the American Ambassador.
Prime Minister. Mr. Lloyd? Mr. Nutting.
Yes. Do sit down.
Thank you.
I've asked you to call informally in the hope that perhaps you could explain American foreign policy to me.
Which aspect of it?
Well, all of it when you've time. But for the moment, let's stick to the Middle East.
I thought you'd say that.
Selwyn?
May I give a resume?
Please do.
Should I be at all inaccurate, do please correct me.
Thank you.
Mr. Dulles suggested the Baghdad Pact. You agree?
Certainly.
And decided to join it. Is that right?
Yes.
Then he changed his mind. Is that right, too?
I am afraid so.
So we have loyally followed a policy which America advocated but hasn't supported.
It was felt our influence would be more beneficial in the Middle East if we didn't join the pact, but viewed it with favor.
That was not America's intention at the start.
No, sir.
See, what the world sees is that we've pushed through a pact which America won't join.
The Prime Minister asked most particularly that if America refused the money for the loan, Nasser should not be told straight away.
Yes.
He was, however, told at once.
We asked that Nasser be told tactfully.
You did.
He was told with exceptional bluntness.
That is a matter of opinion.
The president of the World Bank was appalled at the brutal way Nasser was told.
We also asked to be informed.
I know.
We were not informed.
And we consider ourselves loyal allies of America. We feel great affection for your country. I would have thought that we should be not only informed, but consulted.
See, I'm now put in the extremely embarrassing position of supporting a policy I don't completely agree with, and tactics I frankly deplore, both of which have caused me grave difficulties. Now, let me make one thing plain to you. If either our oil or the Suez Canal is threatened, we shall fight. Now, do you think Mr. Dulles understands that?
I hope so.
Well, you must make sure he does.
I'll try.
Why did Dulles refuse the loan?
He felt America was being blackmailed.
How?
Nasser threatened to go to Russia.
Well, that's not blackmail, that's obvious. Well, where else can he go?
Well, Dulles won't be threatened.
Why throw him into Russia's arms?
He's there already.
He wasn't, but he is now.
He's recognized China.
Well, I want to do that.
We have to cope with the world as it is, not as we would like it to be.
Dulles believes Nasser is a communist.
He's nothing of the sort.
No, Nasser is a nationalist dictator with imperial ambitions, like Mussolini. What we must do is control his foreign ambitions whilst doing all we can to finance his home policy. And this requires delicate negotiation, not blunt refusals. Now, Mr. Dulles, by his over-hasty action, has given Nasser the emotional justification he needs to approach Russia. Now, what I would like to know is this. Does Mr. Dulles imagine Nasser will accept this affront?
Can't answer that.
Does Mr. Dulles imagine Nasser will abandon the dam?
I don't know.
Does Mr. Dulles imagine France will lend the money?
I would hardly think so.
Does Mr. Dulles imagine that Britain can lend the money?
Of course not.
Does Mr. Dulles imagine the World Bank will do it without guarantees from America?
No, sir.
Does Mr. Dulles imagine it's physically possible for Egypt to get the money from anyone but Russia?
No.
Does Mr. Dulles imagine that Russia will give the money without making certain she gets what she wants, namely Russian influence in the Middle East?
I prefer to make no comment.
Does Mr. Dulles imagine that the Russian influence will be in any way beneficial to anyone at all? Will it help Israel? Will it help America? Will it help the Arabs? Will it help the free world?
I wish I was back in Detroit.
Does Mr. Dulles imagine...
I don't know what the hell Mr. Dulles imagines. I take it this conversation is off the record.
Well, of course, that's why my secretary isn't here.
Mr. Dulles' lack of imagination is equaled only by his lack of knowledge. I know that, you know that. All Europe knows it, too. America doesn't, the President doesn't, Congress doesn't. And of course, Mr. Dulles doesn't. I prefer not to discuss or even think about our home affairs, but in foreign affairs, America is led by two blind men. One of them, the President, knows he's blind. The other, Dulles, doesn't. He thinks he can see.
Dear God.
Nor is that all. Congress challenges all Dulles' decisions, but only to make certain the worst course of action is taken. My country. My poor, unhappy country is a blind, well-meaning giant plagued by internal trouble. Desperately searching for the red under the bed when all the time he's there, straight in front of him. I tell you frankly, Sir Anthony, there are times when I wish we'd never left the Empire.
Are you ready, darling?
Nowhere near. Are you?
As much as I'll ever be. I'm still frantically memorizing.
Where the hell are my cufflinks?
Oh, top small drawer on the left. Come in.
Here's the final plan to the table.
But wasn't it all settled this morning?
Oh, we forgot Gaitskell. Well,
that would cause a revolution.
He's sitting next door to Nuri El Said. The little king of Iraq goes here and the crown prince there.
He's the king's uncle.
That's it.
Very pro-British and was regent in the war. He saved us a great deal of trouble then when Germany tried to set up a nationalist government in Iraq.
Splendid.
I'm getting quite good. The king is 20 and went to Harrow.
He's Hussein's cousin.
Morrison is coming. Minister of Defence, Mountbatten. I daren't ask my husband, but Nuri El Said is Iraqi Prime Minister, isn't he?
Quite right.
You mustn't be scornful. As Winston's niece, my political remarks acquired a quite unwarranted significance. People thought I had no views of my own and that I was quoting him all the time. One day I realised I had to know everything or nothing. I decided to know nothing. Now, of course, it's the greatest possible embarrassment to me. Before every function, I wander around the room feverishly learning people's names, jobs and past careers by heart. It's as bad as being royal.
I don't think people's names and careers matter a bit as long as they're properly placed at table. That's what really fusses them.
Clemmy says the same. Socialist town councillors are the worst. If they're below the salt, they threaten bloody revolution before the end of the meal.
There can be no two opinions about it. Court dress should be abolished.
You look gorgeous.
I look like Ivan Novello in King's Rhapsody.
As long as you don't start singing Someday My Heart Will Awake, I shan't mind. Do you want any help?
No, I heard Lance. Any news of Nasser's speech?
No, sir.
Well, find out if he said anything interesting yet.
Yes, sir.
And, Lance, make sure all reports on his speech are brought to me at once.
At dinner, too?
Well, certainly. It's one thing you can do, darling. Help me put on the garter.
Yes.
No. It's on the other side.
Oh, yes.
Nasser's up to something.
How do you know?
Oh, common sense. Nasser's not going to take America's refusal lying down. He hates us and he hates the Iraqi regime. Now, why has he timed his speech to coincide with our dinner in the King of Iraq's honour?
I think that's right, darling.
Yes, it is.
You think he times his speech deliberately?
I'm sure of it. Yes, thank you. Tell me, what do you know about the Suez Canal?
Geographically?
Politically.
It's vital for our trade and for our oil supply, so its security is a matter of life and death to our country.
And that's what the general public believes?
I would say so.
And NASA?
Of course.
And the opposition?
No.
Why not?
They don't like the Empire, which they regard as an exercise in upper-class power politics. The fact that it's the refuge of our working class, has been peopled by working-class immigrants, and is run by the working class and the lower middle class, doesn't stop their strange misconception at all. So the socialists think we should never have been in Egypt or east of Suez, and the canal flows through the former and is our link with the latter.
And if it's endangered?
The extreme left will go mad and not understand anything, and Gaitskell will wait and see how the wind blows and trim his sails accordingly.
Mm. And you're the girl who knows nothing about politics.
I'm learning.
Come in.
Claridge has just telephoned, sir. The King of Iraq is on his way. And Lord Mountbatten says he'll be late.
Oh, yes, of course. He always wants to make an entrance. What news of NASA?
Oh, he's going on and on. A great deal about De Lesseps and the canal.
And?
No, that's all.
I hope he's not going to let me down.
Sir?
Never mind. Keep me informed.
Yes, sir.
Now, remember to curtsy to the King, darling. He's such a sweet boy, you might forget. I tell you, we must hit him now and hit him hard, or we'll all be ruined.
It's an extremely dangerous situation.
NASA's been high-handed, I agree.
High-handed? Is that how you describe the tearing up of a treaty?
The canal reverts to Egypt in a few years' time.
Well, that is not today.
Nevertheless, that is how the people will think of it. He's merely anticipated an event.
And when Hitler militarized the Rhineland, he was walking into his backyard. I'm familiar with all the easy, glib phrases of appeasement.
The two events are not comparable.
Well, I believe they are.
Many countries nationalize their industries.
Dicker, the canal is not an industry.
It makes money for its shareholders.
Foreign capital can only be invested in any country, providing the terms of the loan are respected by that country. To allow a country to tear up a treaty unilaterally, for whatever reason, is to invite further outrages of a similar nature. The canal reverts to NASA eventually, not today. A date in a contract or a treaty is fixed for a purpose, so they can be honored. Now, where are the maps?
Coming, sir.
What do we do?
Invade.
Invade?
Naturally.
Why?
A treaty has been unilaterally broken. I shall enforce it.
Anthony. Invade now?
Yes.
You don't think that's over hasty?
No.
Well, I do.
Egypt threatens world peace. If not today, then tomorrow. My whole career has been spent striving to secure international acceptance that it is an act of war to break a treaty. As long as I'm Prime Minister, that principle will be enforced. NASA understands perfectly that I intend to use force if the canal is endangered.
But it isn't.
Yes, it is. Do you imagine Israel will accept this action lying down?
NASA could be within his rights.
Nonsense.
Iran nationalized oil?
Oil is not an international waterway.
NASA argues it's an Egyptian waterway.
Well, of course he does. And it's an acceptable argument, provided you're prepared to agree to the breakdown of all international contracts, the breakdown of international finance, and the inability of a democratic power to stand up to any dictatorship, no matter how feeble that dictatorship may be. As a recipe for international hooliganism, it's unbeatable.
But the Suez was not just made of foreign capital. 120,000 Egyptian workmen died building it.
Yes, in the Pharaoh's time, I read his propaganda too. In point of fact, only 1,000 Egyptians died when it was built, as did an equal number of Europeans. In any case, Britain had nothing to do with the building of the canal, so we're in no way responsible for any deaths. We bought shares subsequently, and this was and remains a legal financial transaction. I realize the left wing considers Britain to blame for everything since the beginning of time, but such is not the case.
You really must keep calm.
I am. Where are the maps?
Oh, here, sir.
You don't think we should go to the Security Council first?
No.
Why not?
As the United Nations at present operates, it would be a sheer waste of valuable time.
That won't be the socialist view, nor the country's.
I'm aware of that.
Then don't you think you should take their point of view into account?
I have and rejected it.
I see.
America has no discernible policy, so we'll waffle to no purpose. Russia will use their veto.
NASA calls the former Egyptian government corrupt.
It was.
And therefore not representative.
He's quite right.
And so any agreement they signed is not binding.
Now, that's an idiotic argument.
And the socialists won't think so, nor will the general public.
Well, I can't help that. There's adequate information in the papers. They can read, I take it.
First of all, with the possible exception of America, France, and ourselves, there is barely a government this side of the grave which can properly be described as representative. We deal with them all. We recognize any government in power. In any case, NASA himself renegotiated the treaty with us and signed it.
You are dangerously overestimating NASA's importance and NASA's ambitions. But even if you are right to react so violently, we cannot mount an invasion straight away.
Well, then find out how soon one can be mounted. NASA must be destroyed. Lance, get the Israeli ambassador. Also the American and French ambassadors. Inform all cabinet ministers.
What about the opposition leaders?
No, I can't be bothered with them. They can wait.
Yes, sir.
Draft a protest note to the Egyptian government.
Very good, sir.
Put a call through to Washington.
You expected it, didn't you?
You're not a Churchill for nothing. I virtually told NASA to do it. I knew America would refuse the loan, and I knew Dulles was a fool, so of course he'd do it clumsily. And NASA not only won't, but can't give up the dam, because he's built all his country's hopes on it.
Why didn't he go to Russia?
Well, he's scared of her. Egypt will go to Russia sooner or later, but I'd far rather it was later when Britain is ready. So I relied on NASA's hatred of me and of the British.
I see.
The refusal of the money was bound to make him angry, and therefore was bound to make him hit out and wear the easiest target. So I said to him very emphatically, the Suez Canal and the oil supply are vital to us. And he's taken the hint and hit us there. Don't you see, darling, by nationalizing the canal and confiscating its income and assets, he's got the money for the dam, which he wants, and I've stopped him going to Russia, for the moment at least. Not only that, he's given me the excuse I need to move troops back into the canal zone. There'll be a tremendous fuss when we invade, but either we'll stay, or you know, led by Russia and America, will insist we withdraw, and you know troops move in. And we'll have established a vital principle in the future. If America and Russia confront each other on the Suez Canal, they'll have to agree to UNO moving in. It'll have been their own idea.
You are very, very clever.
Well, I left kindergarten a long time ago. But I'm afraid it means an early retirement. I'm committing political suicide. Colonel Nasser, in defiance of international agreements, has nationalized the Suez Canal. It is the view of Her Majesty's government that security of transit through the canal can only be secured by international authority. It is upon this we must insist.
Hear, hear.
It is upon this we are working in negotiations at the moment with other powers deeply concerned. No arrangements can be made for the future of this great international waterway acceptable to Her Majesty's government, which would leave it in the unfettered control of a single power, who could exploit it purely for purposes of national policy, as has just been done.
Bravo! Bravo! On this side of the house, we deeply deplore the high-handed and totally unjustifiable step by the Egyptian government. There will be repercussions of this event throughout the Middle East. I must remind the House that Colonel Nasser has repeatedly boasted of his intentions to create an Arab empire from the Atlantic to the Persian Gulf. This episode must be recognized as part of the struggle for the mastery of the Middle East. That is something I do not feel we can ignore. I do not feel we can place any reliance on Colonel Nasser's assurance that the canal would remain open to all users. In view of the fact that the Egyptian government is already stopping Israeli ships from going through, and equally important, indeed even more important, its clear defiance of the United Nations resolution condemning the action, passed in September 1951. It is all very familiar. It is exactly the same that we encountered from Mussolini and Hitler before the war. I believe that we are right to react sharply.
Hear, hear!
There are circumstances in which we might be compelled to use force.
Hear, hear!
Nevertheless, It would be difficult to find in anything NASA has done any legal justification for the use of force. Has the Prime Minister in mind to refer the matter to the Security Council?
Her Majesty's government is having consultations with the French and US governments.
If the US will not stand with us, we may have to stand without them. I ask the government not to be too nervous. Because if they are too nervous, we shall begin to evolve a situation in which countries can set themselves up against international practice, international morals, and international interest. And in that, we are not helping the peace of the world.
We are, of course, taking precautionary measures. We are strengthening all our forces in the Eastern Mediterranean. We are calling up 20,000 reservists. I'm receiving from the other side of the house. And may I assure them I do not intend to let Colonel Nasser get away with it.
That didn't go so badly.
No. Gaitskell and Morrison are with us.
Don't you believe it? The bastards are hedging their bets.
The Prime Minister will be here soon. He was detained at the house.
How are things there?
Well, the opposition is rested.
They supported the Prime Minister very strongly at first.
Oh, yes, but then they never imagined for one moment he meant all he said. May I offer you a drink?
Not for me. I will, please. Scotch with ice.
All right. They thought he'd be like Attlee, who declared on a Wednesday that we'd never leave Aberdeen and left on Thursday.
Perhaps wiser counsels prevailed.
Perhaps so. Mr. Dulles, how good of you to come.
Sir Anthony.
You have a drink?
I prefer not to.
Are you, sir? Please.
Your secretary says the opposition is rested.
Their tactics are quite simple. If I act, then I'm a bully. If I don't act, then I'm weak. In either case, I'm wrong. Such a party view of a politically dangerous situation is beneath contempt. Thank you, Lance. Shall we get down to business?
By all means. I told the Secretary of State you were somewhat confused by American policy. How?
Well, you suggested what has now become the Baghdad Pact, a suggestion Her Majesty's government welcomed, but you haven't joined it.
I can only sign a pact with the approval of Congress. Congress did not approve.
Why not?
Well, it's no secret there were powerful lobbies against the pact. Not just the Jewish one, the oil and cotton lobbies, too.
But in such circumstances, what are we to do?
The complexity of the American Constitution is one of the facts of life we all have to live with.
When I suggest a policy, it's not just my policy, it's the cabinet's policy.
We operate differently.
So a suggestion from me as Prime Minister is therefore a serious one, likely to become government policy and accepted by the House. A suggestion from you or any other American Secretary of State is a personal one, likely to be denied by Congress.
But you know this.
Well, yes, but you made your suggestion publicly, and an idea from an American Secretary of State is taken seriously by the world.
I can only act within the limits of the American Constitution.
Well, yes, I know, but what I'm establishing with you today is that these limitations place your allies in considerable embarrassment. I cannot follow a policy to abandon it at a moment's notice as you can. And therefore, with the best will in the world, the complexity of the American Constitution forces your allies at times to act alone. I'm sure you understand this.
You've made your position quite clear.
Yes. There's another point which I would like to clarify, too.
Please do.
Whilst I fully understand why you refused Egypt the loan, I'm unable to understand why you did it so abruptly without informing us.
I cannot accept that. You were informed.
After the event.
My ambassador here warned of the possibility.
Yes, that is so, of course. But we at once requested that you delay announcing your decision and take your time before informing Egypt.
Nasser is a communist. I saw no point in not being blunt.
Nasser's desperate for money. Surely he will go to Russia.
He already has.
Not seriously. We are driving him into Russian arms, and that is my whole point. We should cease to do so.
We cannot help Egypt this year. There's no Arab vote in America, and we have an election coming up. Hence, as much as I would like to, we cannot join the Baghdad Pact.
But Nasser opposes the Baghdad Pact.
The other Arab states are just as anti-Israel. The whole Arab world must become more amenable first before we can join any pact with them.
But they won't become that without money and help from the West. The Jews of America are being most unwise. They must see the situation for what it is.
The situation in America is that this administration will not survive if we are friendly with the Arabs. Nasser must go first.
Oh, certainly he must go. There, I agree with you.
Once he goes, the Arabs will become less fanatical.
Well, I hope so.
It's intolerable that the Suez Canal should be under the domination of any single power.
I agree.
There must be international control.
Quite.
What about Panama?
That's a different matter altogether.
It won't seem so to Egypt.
We can use the 1888 Constantinople Convention as a basis. I've looked into it with great care. It makes no mention of Panama, only of Suez. A way must be found to make Nasser disgorge what he is attempting to swallow.
So I couldn't put it better myself. Of course, Nasser won't give up the canal just because we ask him to. Force may have to be used.
As a last resort.
Of course.
We must carry world opinion with us.
In my experience, that will prove extremely difficult. Free world opinion is naturally opposed to force, and was, for example, wholeheartedly behind appeasement in 1938. Within weeks, it realized the mistake it had made, but it was too late. We cannot allow it to make the same mistake again.
No precipitate military action can possibly be taken this year.
A threat to the canal is a threat to our oil supply. No British government can agree to being slowly strangled. Whatever the socialists may say in opposition, if they were in office, they would react as I do. So you must understand, beyond shadow of doubt, that if it comes to the point, we will fight. And if necessary, we will fight alone.
The fact remains, we cannot mount an airborne invasion at a moment's notice.
Well, I believe we could.
It's too risky.
Well, I don't believe so. It will have the element of surprise.
Certainly. Our folly will astonish the world.
Once landed in the canal zone, our paratroopers could keep the Egyptians at bay for weeks.
We haven't the planes, we haven't the supplies. We are just not equipped for this sort of commando operation yet, in a year's time perhaps.
Well, I can't wait a year or two.
And what's more, Prime Minister, we haven't the legal justification.
What's that?
No, sir.
Selwyn.
That's what the Foreign Office says.
But the treaty states
that if the canal is in danger...
Which it is.
Which it isn't.
Nasser has nationalized the canal.
He has neither blocked it nor stopped ships going through.
He stopped Israeli one.
He started that in 1951.
I don't bloody well care if it happened in 1066.
So we have accepted the situation.
But I haven't. Is everybody blind except me? Now get on to the Foreign Office and tell them from me to do their homework properly and find me a reason to invade.
The Foreign Office is not used to finding specious reasons for going to war.
That's the sort of damn fool argument I expected from you. Nasser has first of all stopped Israeli ships, and now he's nationalized the canal. If this is accepted, then he can stop any ships, ours included, and therefore stop our oil supply.
Why didn't we react so sharply in 1951?
We have protested through, you know, what has Nasser done? Laughed. We have tried negotiations. What has Nasser done? Torn up the treaty. If you plan to accept every affront without protest, then you're in the wrong party.
I've no objection to a strong protest. I am objecting to going to war.
And when the protest is ignored, what do you propose to do about it?
Go to UNO.
You have explained to me, as no one else has, why we went to war in 1939 instead of 1936. I'm fully prepared, I assure you, for demands for a Munich-like surrender from both sides of the house.
But you are not dealing with Germany now.
I wanted to deal with Mussolini as I proposed to deal with Nasser. Italy isn't Germany either. Why are the British people so determined never to fight until all the cards are against them?
When we went to war in 1939, the country was ready for it.
Well, it was nearly too late. Only a series of miracles saved us.
You cannot go to war without the people behind you.
I'm not going to war. This is a police action.
The days of gunboat diplomacy are over.
Gunboat diplomacy secured peace in the world for several decades. I shouldn't sneer at it if I were you. In any case, this is not a gunboat diplomacy. This is legally enforcing our legal rights. And if you can't understand that, then you can't understand anything.
I really don't think I'm being at all useful here.
There's no point in losing our tempers. We have to put it to you, Prime Minister, the Foreign Office point of view, which is that nationalization of the canal is not sufficient reason for an invasion.
It is not the nationalization as such I want to fight about. Egypt signed treaties about the canal. No one forced her to do so. Nasser signed them. We cannot unilaterally denounce any treaty and break it, but he has just done so. That is the legal justification. If the Foreign Office advises differently, then the Foreign Office is wrong.
Can we deal with the practical aspect of this proposed invasion? It's quite impossible. During the war, even the invasion of Sicily took several weeks to mount, and then we had all the resources of the US and the Commonwealth on our side. Now we have neither. So whether your policy is right or wrong, an invasion straight away just can't be done.
What are the Israelis doing?
They've mobilized.
Are their armies moving?
Not yet.
When they do, we have our excuse.
You can't invade Egypt if Israel attacks her.
My dear Nutting, I'm sorry if I confused you. These problems are difficult when you're inexperienced. So we'll take it point by point. If Israel attacks Egypt, Egypt will fight back. Do you agree? Is that right?
Probably.
With two armies fighting by the canal zone, the security of the canal is endangered. Is that right?
Yes.
Good, well done. Allow me to be the first to congratulate
you. We still can't invade.
Why not?
We can't do it without America. And she'll never go to war in an election year.
Why can't we do it alone?
We haven't the money.
Oh, I see, a dedicated appeaser. If we aren't careful, sooner or later the Middle East will be an enormous battlefield. To avoid that, a run on the pound is a small price to pay. Yes, what is it?
The car, sir.
What for?
To take you and the Foreign Secretary to the House.
Oh, yes.
The House is distinctly hostile, and there are demonstrators outside.
Marvellous how people waste their time. Do they seriously imagine that any politician is going to change his views because of a few hundred people yelling at him? Most of the time I can't even hear what they're saying.
Riots in Budapest. The Russian army is moving.
Yes, well, we expected that. It's not important.
Not important?
We have no treaty with the Hungarian government. There are no international waterways in Hungary. The security of the world is not affected. But I assure you, Nutting, I will do all I can. I will send a note of protest. Quite strongly worded, too. I wonder if Khrushchev will even bother to read it. Any other news?
No, sir.
Let's run the gauntlet.
We must remember he's very ill.
I've certainly never seen him like this.
Neither have I. But if he isn't ill, he's mad.
I'm amazed you kept your temper.
Well, one of us had to.
Is it true he collapsed the other day?
Well, that's got out, is it? Yes, it's quite true. I thought he was going to die. Now, fortunately, he was visiting his wife in hospital. Oh, she's much better, by the way. And he suddenly had a violent attack of fever and passed out.
So he's wrong when he claims the operation was a success.
No, well, not really. He was warned then that when under stress, he'd get these feverish attacks. I don't know what to do. I cannot support a policy I consider sheer lunacy.
No.
Nasser isn't Hitler. You can't understand that. I'd better go to the House. Coming?
I don't think so. I don't enjoy funerals.
Moment. Much as I would like to give the House news, I am unable to, as consultations are still in progress.
I'll be at war!
When I have any news to give the House, naturally I will do so.
I'll be at war! Answer the question!
Answer. Her Majesty's government has, throughout the crisis, reserved the right to use force. That if the Egyptian government refuses to negotiate or refuses to cooperate, then the Egyptian government will once more be in breach of the Constantinople Convention of 1888.
What a peacemaker!
In that event.
Russia about Hungary to be listened to if we invade Suez.
Because Russia is acting in defiance
of her treaty of friendship with Hungary. We are acting in accordance with our treaty with Egypt.
Hear, hear.
I've explained the difference between the two actions, but I cannot give the honourable members opposite the ability to understand the explanation. Because we remembered you urged us not to be nervous. I also recall the leader of the opposition's stirring words of support. Government being in breach of the Convention of 1888 again, Her Majesty's government and others will be free to take further steps
as seem
to be required, either through the United Nations or by other means.
I should like to assure the Prime Minister that amongst his Conservative supporters there is not a whiff of criticism of the government. Unless a story would be incredible if it were not true. He was put there by the American ambassador in Cairo. His ban on Israeli ships was acquiesced to by all, despite the order of the Security Council of the United Nations Organization. Arms were given to him and denied to Israel. And all the time he was working against us in the Sudan, Saudi Arabia, the Persian Gulf, Jordan and Syria, and bearing anti-British propaganda to every part of Africa and Arabia. He buys communist arms and is rewarded with the offer of a loan for the Aswan Dam. The offer is withdrawn, whereupon he seizes the Suez Canal. I am content to recite the bare facts. I must remind the House that we went through all this in the 1930s, and it wasn't much fun. Shameless appeasement does not really pay. As I listened to the Prime Minister, I thought of what Nasser had been saying about an Arab empire, about eliminating Israel altogether, and I said to myself, well, thank goodness we shan't have to go through all that, and we shan't.
The Israeli ambassador is here, sir.
What does she want?
I don't know. It must be important. She wants to see you alone.
Yes, all right, show her in.
Yes.
How are you?
Sir Anthony, I was in the House.
Oh, it didn't go too badly.
Gateskill was extremely angry.
I've never been able to get on with him. Do sit down.
Thank you.
One thing is certain, at every crisis we must expect English hypocrisy to have a ball, as the Americans say. Can I offer you anything?
No, thank you. Your secretary looked after me admirably. By the way, what are the Americans saying?
Is that what you came to see me about?
No.
Well, in my view, they go from crazy plan to crazy plan. It's all I can do not to say what I think of them in public. The latest is the Canal Users Club.
That's no use.
Well, no, but I'll have to cooperate, though, to show willing. What do the French say?
The French want us to invade.
That is what you came to see me about?
Yes.
Well,
we are divided. The military party wishes to do so.
Well, of course.
What do you say?
It depends on how much say the military has in the final decision.
Quite. They are very confident.
I'm sure. They have every reason to be.
They believe our army could be in Cairo within 3 days. The plan is that the French, who are as anxious as you are to unseat Nasser, would attack as well.
Go on.
That's all.
Well, no, it isn't. Or what do the opponents of this plan say?
That is all I am able to tell you.
I see. Well, if I were a member of the Israeli cabinet and the plans were put to me, I think I'd have the generals arrested.
Everyone believes you will support it.
Yes, I know. I want them to. If you take Cairo, are you going to keep it?
I can't answer that.
If you don't keep it, are you just going to march through it or occupy it for a year or so?
I've no information on that.
Whichever you decide, you will inflict on Egypt and the Arabs so bitter a humiliation that they will never, and I mean never, talk sense about Israel again. They'd wait forever for revenge.
I remember our last conversation. You're quite right about Bismarck. Alsace-Lorraine was his one major mistake.
Where do the French plan to attack? Alexandria and then into Cairo? But there's no legal justification for it. We only have the right to go to the canal zone.
I'm told it's a most interesting place.
I won't go anywhere else.
I wouldn't.
And we couldn't agree to anyone else taking trips to Cairo.
I have great faith in your judgment.
A lot of people are going to be very cross with us.
You're quite wrong, Sir Anthony. They'll only be cross with you.
I was there.
I'm so sorry.
Oh, my darling.
No, don't touch me. Don't speak to me.
I love you so much.
Yes, I love you too. But I can't have anyone near me.
What am I to do?
Well, don't go away, but don't. Just stay there. Give me time.
Is it all necessary?
The lineup was exactly like 1914, the attitude exactly like 1938. I had to move in. We must remember that I didn't go into politics to get a knighthood or become a peer. I went into politics to serve my country, to serve the world.
But when you're proved right?
Well, I won't be, not for years. So you see, it's the end of my career. Oh. No, you mustn't cry. After today, the house would never be the same to me. Perhaps it'll never be the same to anyone. Oh. We'll build a life. I'll accept a peerage. I dare say I'll be able to put my oar in from time to time. We shouldn't be upset. So I've done all I wanted to do.
I'm sorry, sir.
What is it?
Mr. Gateskill and Mr. Morrison.
What now?
They say it's important.
Well, really?
No, show them in.
No, don't. Sir Anthony is ill.
Show them in, yes.
When I think of how they've just behaved...
No, it doesn't matter, darling.
Lady Eden? We regret disturbing
you. What can I do for you?
Prime Minister... It was impossible to hear your answers to certain questions.
That was not his fault.
It was not I who made a vulgar exhibition of myself in the House, but the Socialist front bench.
I am really sorry to have come to see you now, but I have tried repeatedly to warn you to secure information.
I chose not to see you.
Then you can hardly expect the opposition to support you. May I ask, have our troops gone into Egypt?
Yes.
Alone?
With the French.
So we are at war.
No.
But you've just said our troops are engaged.
That's right.
Then we are at war.
No.
When men are fighting, they are at war.
Not necessarily. It's a police action.
Gunboat politics.
Yes, well, I've heard that fatuous description before. You may call it what you like.
You have seriously endangered our position vis-à-vis Russia and Budapest.
Oh, I was waiting for that. We're in a stronger position as ever.
How is that possible? We have done what Russia has, invaded a country.
I have gone into the canal zone, a specific area, in accordance with my treaty rights, a treaty you know all about. If you thought we should not have these rights, you should have said so long ago. You didn't because you're either incompetent or a coward.
That is no way to speak to the leader of the opposition.
I witnessed your sadistic behavior half an hour ago. Have you forgotten it already?
You certainly chose the right moment to come and see me. That you and your idiotic supporters should compare my behavior with Russia's betrays the childishness of your political thinking. I've not attacked the capital. My tanks are not crushing free speech in Cairo. I have neither imprisoned nor humiliated any political leaders. And unlike you and your supporters in the House, I've not even tried to silence them. I've done all I can about Budapest. I've sent a message of protest.
That protest is worthless.
It always is. Are you so naive as to imagine any verbal protest is going to shake Russia at all? Would you rather I sent an army?
Of course not, darling. They merely want to indulge in the luxury of hypocritical, self-righteous indignation.
We have some serious questions to put to the Prime Minister, Lady Eden.
Then it is a great pity you wasted valuable parliamentary time by behaving like a hooligan.
You are both losing perspective. You've seen the House in an excitable mood before.
I have never before witnessed such monstrous, outrageous tactics. You're supposed to be the leader of the opposition, not of a street gang. However, we're not in the House now, and I'm able to indulge in the luxury of telling you what I think of you.
Prime Minister...
You both make me vomit with disgust.
I came here to do my job as leader of Her Majesty's opposition, and I propose to do so.
I observe you've left out the word loyal. I'm not a bit surprised. I cannot recall a single occasion when either you or your party has put the country first.
That is a disgraceful thing to say.
It's a disgraceful fact.
Lady Eden.
My uncle always says you socialists will rat on every occasion.
Your uncle...
Saved the country in the war, only to be rejected by you when it ended.
Will you please answer me, Prime Minister? Has there been collusion between France, Israel, and you?
I have acted in accordance with our treaty rights. That is why I sign treaties, to keep them and to enforce them. I realize, Mr. Gateskill, you're without political integrity, so you wouldn't understand such
a thing. And I realize, Sir Anthony, you are an extremely ill man and no longer fully responsible for your actions.
Damn you to hell! I'm not so ill that I can't make mincemeat of you in the House as I did the other day. And that is why you organized your hooligan supporters into yelling me down.
They were not organized. It was spontaneous.
I wasn't born yesterday. I know an organized demonstration when I see one.
You are taking the country into war without consulting Parliament.
Well, now you're here, however, you can hear my speech. At least I'm not so ill that I don't know what I'm saying, which is more than I can say for you. Now, let me refer you to Hansard. I quote, "On this side of the House... we deeply deplore the high hand."
I know what I said.
You're going to listen to your own speech whether you like it or not.
Prime Minister.
You describe the Egyptian government as being totally unjustified in its action. You remind the House of Nasser's ambitions for an Arab empire. Did you or did you not say that?
I won't be shouted at.
I haven't finished! You haven't got your street gang to support you now! I quote again. Listen very carefully, Mr. Gateskill. They're your words. It is all very familiar. It is exactly the same as Hitler and Mussolini before the war. There are circumstances in which we might be compelled to use force. Did you or did you not say that?
I came...
Don't answer him, Hugh.
You cannot go to war without informing Parliament and without the country behind you, and that is why our party is so upset.
Then I suggest you listen to me in the House. I'm very fond of your speech, too, Mr. Morrison. You say... Where is it? You say, if the US will not stand with us, we might have to stand without them. What does that mean, but go it alone? You tell us not to be too nervous. What does that mean, but go it alone? You tell us that international practice, morals, and interests must be respected. What does that mean, but that we should prepare to enforce them?
We were not fully cognizant.
You are a politician, Mr. Gateskill. You are an MP, Mr. Gateskill. You're leader of the opposition, Mr. Gateskill. You, God help the country, are an alternative prime minister, Mr. Gateskill. You should be fully cognizant. You should know your job. The Middle East problem has been with us for a long, long time. Israel has existed since 1948. The Suez Canal has been there since the middle of the last century. For 6 years, the socialists were the government of this country. Did you do nothing except spread hatred of your political opponents?
Let's go here.
I came here to give our point of view, and that is what I am going to do. We do not believe in force. If attempts at negotiation fail, then we must go to the Security Council of the United Nations and act through and with them.
It's not possible.
What isn't?
That you said that seriously.
I am perfectly serious.
Oh, God, how tragic. You're like a child. You shouldn't be in politics. You've learned nothing. I have one last attempt. Before the war, the Socialist Party insisted on what he called collective security. But with no army, because you wouldn't have one, how could we have collective security? In 1935, I tried to force the League to stop Mussolini. I failed. I failed because we were not armed. I failed because the world wanted peace at any price. This failure meant we had to be prepared at the next crisis to do it alone. Had we done so, Hitler and Stalin would have been stopped. Now, it is after the war. And we have, you know, this without an army, this with Russia's veto, is equally useless. So in words of one syllable, we have to go to war on our own if we are to keep the peace.
You don't know. If we had gone to war alone in 1936, it might have been a fiasco as this is.
But this isn't a fiasco. It's completely successful. Nasser may be strengthened at home, but his army has been proved feeble to a degree, so his military ambitions are thwarted. I've stopped Israel from going too far, and the French too. Nasser has got his money from the canal dues, not from Russia, and Russia and America are so cross with me, they'll insist on a UNO force going to the canal. And next time, because there will be a next time, Russia and America won't be able to prevent UNO stepping in. Neither will Egypt and Israel. I've stopped the fire from spreading. There was nothing more to be said.
Well, we'd better be going.
Yes.
I am very sorry it happened like this.
I'm sorry too.
He's wrong, you know. That demonstration wasn't organized.
He's wrong about everything. We aren't unpatriotic. We aren't...
Just go, Mr. Morrison. Just go.
If I could take a photograph of you and Lady Aisling.
Oh. Yes, certainly, certainly. I'll just call her. Darling?
What is it?
We have to have our photographs taken.
Oh, dear. Well, I'll have to change my dress.
Just a minute, I... Do you want us looking glamorous or casual?
Casual.
Come as you are. He wants old clothes.
You're being very patient.
Not at all. Where do you want us to go?
Sit together on the bench.
Is the light good enough?
Oh, yes, fine.
Good.
You enjoy retirement?
I adore it. Oh, darling, yes, yes. He wants us to sit here.
Here. Right.
Lovely. If I could have a smile...
Oh, I always think smiling photographs look so forced.
As you like.
No more, please. I'm really rather tired.
I'll see you to your car. This way.
Could I ask one last question?
Yes.
We've talked a lot about Suez. I'd like to go to something else. What do you consider the greatest triumph of your career?
Why, Suez, of course. What else? It's not every day one creates the machinery for preventing the Third World War.
Thank you.
Not at all.
I enjoyed the interview, sir.
Yes, so did I.
Well, darling, how did it go?
Oh, he didn't agree with a word I said. And shall I tell you what the last sentence of his article will be?
And there Lord Avon sat, in his garden, as deluded as ever. Oh, it's getting chilly. Shall we go in?
In Suez by Royce Wrighton, Sir Anthony Eden was played by Peter Barkworth, Lady Eden, Sarah Bedell, Colonel Nasser, David Buck, the Israeli ambassador, Gwen Watford, the Egyptian ambassador, Neville Jason, the American ambassador, Garrick Hagen. John Foster Dulles was played by Peter Marinka, Hugh Gateskill, Jeffrey Collins, Selwyn Lloyd, William Fox, Earl Mountbatten, John Westbrook, Anthony Nutting, Jeremy Clyde, Lance Ellsworthy, Anthony Hyde, Herbert Morrison, John Bott, a Tory backbencher, Roger Hammond, and the British ambassador in Cairo, Patrick Barr. Other members of Parliament were Alexander John, Godfrey Kenton, and John McAndrew. The reporter was Philip Sully. The play was directed by David Spencer.